It's goodbye. Until next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatimi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Qul in صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. Iran says it has no decision to hold direct talks with the U.S., but may consider such negotiations if they help reach a good deal at the Vienna talks. The situation is escalating in Burkina Faso, where the army announces a nationwide night curfew after ousting President Kabore in a coup. And the West takes the stand up with Russia to a new level, with the U.S. putting 8,500 troops on alert for deployment and NATO sending ships and fighter jets to Eastern Europe. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. Iran's foreign minister says developing ties with neighboring countries is the Islamic Republic's foreign policy priority. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the comment during the first national conference of Iran and neighbors in Tehran. Amir Abdullahian said his country welcomes new round of talks with Saudi Arabia, adding that Tehran has kept the door open for Riyadh. He noted that Iran would respond positively whenever Riyadh decides to normalize its diplomatic relations with Tehran. The top diplomat also called on Saudi Arabia and the UAE to take a constructive political approach to end the blockade and war on Yemen and pave the way for an intra-Yemeni dialogue. He also touched upon the ongoing Vienna negotiations on the revival of the 2015 deal and the possibility of direct talks with the U.S.
The American side sends us messages through various means where they express their desire to have a level of direct negotiations with the Islamic Republic of Iran. Our direct negotiations are with the P4+1 currently. If we get to a stage where reaching a good deal with strong guarantees necessitates direct talks with the United States, we will consider this in the agenda that we will have in the negotiations to remove sanctions.
Amir Abdullahian, however, added that there is no decision yet on any direct talks with Washington. His comments come as the eighth round of talks between Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 deal is underway in the Austrian capital. The talks are aimed at removing the anti-Iran sanctions that the U.S. imposed following its unilateral withdrawal from the deal in 2018. The U.S. is not directly involved in the talks.
Iran and the remaining signatories of the 2015 agreement that promised sanctions relief for certain caps on Iran's nuclear program are intensifying the process of drafting a revived deal. Delegates from Iran, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, China, and the EU have now adopted a new format for discussions meeting together in one room to focus on the Iranian demands for verified and effective removal of U.S. sanctions and guarantees Washington will not withdraw from the agreement in future or reimpose sanctions. This while expert-level talks continue in other rooms on Iranian nuclear commitments and the sequencing of steps that need to be taken for Iran and the U.S. to go back to full compliance. European and American officials have been raising concerns about the amount of time left to reach a conclusion, with some diplomats suggesting they only have weeks, and other sources citing early February as an unofficial deadline.
If Western countries give the necessary assurances, the necessary guarantees, and if they remove the sanctions, then that will be enough. But if they want to drag their feet, if they want to be slow about it, then the negotiations will be slow. For Iran, that is the issue. The dates, the length of the negotiations, whether it takes a week or a month or a year, that's irrelevant. Because the Iranians know if they get a bad deal, there's nothing that they're going to be able to do about it. So they have to make sure that the Europeans and the Americans are unable to cheat them at the negotiating table.
Sources close to the talks say the negotiations are progressing at a normal pace. To claim that the talks have stagnated is unfair, they say, because resolving the outstanding issues requires further discussions given the complexities of the problems. Omar Lezgi, Vienna.
Damascus slams U.S.-led sanctions against Syria's economic terrorism, saying the bans have had catastrophic impacts on the country's human rights situation. Deputy Foreign Minister Bashar Jaafari says the coercive economic measures target people's livelihood and their right to life and welfare. He was addressing the UN Human Rights Council's first review of Syria's records since October 2016. Jaafari accused Britain, France, Israel, Turkey, and the U.S. of violating international law by occupying parts of his country. He said the foreign occupation and support of terrorist groups has limited Syria's ability to protect its citizens' human rights. He also accused U.S. forces of destroying oil and gas infrastructure in the Euphrates region. Jaafari stressed that the Syrian government is facilitating aid deliveries while facing what he called a systematic terrorist war. Hundreds of Palestinians attend a funeral procession for a man who died from tear gas inhalation hours after an Israeli raid on Golania refugee camp north of Al-Quds. 57-year-old Fahmi Hamad was one of the three Palestinians hospitalized after the raid. They were injured during clashes that erupted between Israeli forces and Palestinians trying to defend the camp. Regime troopers frequently storm Palestinian neighborhoods in the occupied territories. They often use live fire and tear gas to crack down on any acts of protest. Many of these raids turn out deadly. Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have held a sit-in rally to voice solidarity with the Palestinian inmates languishing in Israeli jails amid the spread of the COVID-19 virus. The protesters called on the international community to take practical steps to put an end to Israel's medical negligence policy that has already endangered the lives of Palestinian inmates. Ruba Shabit has more in this report.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip came together to highlight the plight of the Palestinian inmates in Israeli jails amid the spread of COVID-19 infection. According to Wa'ad Institute for Palestinian Prisoners Affairs, the virus is significantly on the rise among the inmates, infecting hundreds of Palestinian prisoners who have caught the new coronavirus. The statement indicates that more than 100 of the Palestinians have tested positive. These Palestinians say the spread of the virus among Palestinian inmates is the result of Israel's intentional policy of medical negligence.
Israeli regime keeps adopting inhumane measures against our prisoners, depriving them of their basic rights. There is a clear intentional medical negligence by Israeli regime that is aimed on putting more pressure on our inmates.
The Palestinians called on the international community and the Red Cross to provide the required medical care for Palestinian inmates and stop the spread of the pandemic in Israeli jails. Palestinian factions in the Gaza Strip say they hold the Israeli regime fully responsible for the lives of the Palestinian inmates, stressing that the prisoners' issue is a top priority and they won't remain silent over these Israeli violations.
The issue of our prisoners remains our top priority and red line. We can't remain silent when it comes to the ongoing crimes committed against our brothers and sisters inside Israeli jails. It is our religious and national duty to defend them against any aggression.
According to Palestinian authorities, 5,000 Palestinians, including women and minors, are currently held in Israeli jails, with many of them under the so-called administrative policy, which enables Israel to hold them in jail with no charge. The total number of infections among Palestinian inmates has risen rapidly, according to the Prisoners Club statement. Palestinians are calling on the international community to make an action, adding this intentional medical negligence amounts to complicity in the Israeli crimes practiced against Palestinians inside jails. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Anti-coup rallies in Sudan turned deadly again. Security forces resort to force and live rounds as people hit the streets to denounce the October coup and a military-dominated transitional government. Medics say three demonstrators were fatally shot across the country. Police also used tear gas to disperse protesters in the capital and several other cities. The African nation has been embroiled in chaos since the military takeover and the arrest of officials, including then Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok. In a deal, Hamdok was reinstated, but he resigned a few weeks later. 76 people have been killed and hundreds more injured in crackdown on protests since October. Sudanese regularly take to the streets to demand the return of civilian rule and justice for those killed. Crisis in Burkina Faso has entered a new phase as the army announces takeover and overthrow of the president Roch Kabore. It has suspended the has also been backlash. The African Union Commission has condemned the coup and called on the armed forces to relinquish power. Also, the United Nations has called on the coup leaders to lay down their arms. The developments come a day after mutiny in a number of army bases where soldiers demanded the dismissal of the country's top brass and demanded more resources to fight militant groups. Tensions between Russia and the West over Ukraine have reached fever pitch. The United States says it has put around 8,500 of its troops on standby for deployment to Eastern Europe. The Pentagon made the announcement saying the troops will be dispatched if Russia invades Ukraine. Washington says the forces are intended to bolster NATO's quick response force. The military alliance has announced that its member states are sending additional ships and fighter jets to Eastern Europe. NATO has vowed to take all necessary measures to reinforce its alliance in response to what it calls Russia's buildup of troops near Ukraine's border. The European Union has also pledged aid for Ukraine and threatened sanctions against Russia.
Germany's stance in the escalating tensions between Russia and Ukraine is under increased scrutiny. Although other NATO allies, including the US, have also agreed to export weapons directly to Ukraine, the German government has so far declined to do so. The Wall Street Journal reported on Saturday that Berlin has refused to issue permits for weapons exports from Estonia to Ukraine.
The Germans do have a history of de-escalating and of not trying in any case to be in the forefront if there is any conflict. In the case of Ukraine, the official wording is that the Germans bear a responsibility for the happenings, the adventures of the last war.
German government officials have said they oppose sending arms to Ukraine as they fear that such deliveries could push tensions higher and make negotiations more difficult. That's while Germany remains one of the world's top arms producers and exporters, with sales increasing 21% from 2016 to 2020. Kiev is furious over Germany's decision and is accusing Berlin of encouraging Russia to invade Ukraine, while the Kremlin denies the allegations. The US, Britain, and several Baltic states have agreed to send Kiev weapons, including anti-tank and anti-aircraft missiles. Meanwhile, some 90 tons of US lethal aid arrived in Ukraine on Saturday. The consignment is the first shipment of a $200 million package the US approved in December. Conversely, the shipment arrived hours after Russia's foreign minister and his U.S. counterpart held what they called frank talks to try to reduce the chance of a wider conflict in Ukraine. Also, It is believed that Washington is using the Ukraine crisis as a pretext to further its policy of attempting to restrain Russia and China. Washington has threatened several German companies involved in the construction of the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline with economic sanctions. The completed multi-billion dollar pipeline is set to double Russian gas supplies to Germany, but has been entangled in a highly politicized approval process.
Wait, that pipeline, since more than 1 month, is ready to deliver. It is ready to deliver all that is missing, or nearly all that is missing, in the European and German market. But we are stopping it. We are blocking it on behalf of Washington. Crazy story.
Therefore, this is every indication that it is NATO members who are escalating tensions around Ukraine. The U.S., its NATO allies, and Ukraine have accused Moscow of amassing troops near Ukraine's border for a possible invasion. But Moscow says it has deployed troops along its western border to ensure its security in the face of NATO's eastward expansion.
The UK is also following the US line when it comes to Russia and its President Putin. Another false allegation as Russia sees it. London has alleged that the Kremlin is seeking to install a pro-Russian leader in Ukraine. The UK has also gone ahead and sent a small number of anti-armored defensive weapon systems along with a small contingent of army personnel to Ukraine.
The UK has accused Russia of trying to install an ally in Ukraine. This provoked a strong response from Moscow, calling the allegations nothing but nonsense and disinformation. In a statement released on Saturday, the British Foreign Office claimed to have information that indicates the Russian government is looking to install a pro-Russian leader in Kiev and is considering a former Ukrainian lawmaker as a potential candidate. It also claimed that Russia is gearing up to invade and occupy Ukraine.
They are doing regime change globally, and they think this is their God-given right to do that. They want it for Iran, they want it for South American countries like Venezuela, they tried with Guaido. This is typical Western policy, and now they are accusing again, you know, another country of what they are doing themselves. That is also a very typical US and NATO story.
It seems that London is following in Washington's footsteps. It has also threatened Russia with severe economic sanctions if it goes ahead with the alleged scheme. The UK had also supplied 2,000 missiles and a team of elite troops to Ukraine this week amid rising tensions. The timing and mysterious nature of the intelligence disclosure coincides with bombshell revelations about a series of parties at Downing Street during COVID lockdowns, as well as a record inflation level. It is also fueling the widespread discontent with the Boris Johnson government. He is now facing resignation calls even from within his own party. This raises a question, and that is whether some in the British government are simply eager to deflect attention from the problems that threaten to topple Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
Well, that's a wrap for this hour's World News. Many thanks.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless Thou takes it away, and leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger, and I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
In the limelight.
U.S. Republican Senator Mitt Romney, Congresswoman Liz Cheney, and others recently helped kill off a voting rights bill that Democrats claim is essential to protecting democracy from a Trump-driven onslaught. We now present you an article written by David Smith. The piece is titled U.S. Republican Resistance to Trump Rings Hollow as So-Called Moderates Say No on Voting Rights. U.S. Senator Mitt Romney, Congresswoman Liz Cheney, and others were hailed as the so-called conscience of the Republican Party. But their deeds in the Senate have provoked accusations of hypocrisy. They have been hailed as the purported heroes of the resistance to former U.S. President Donald Trump's hostile takeover. But Senator Mitt Romney, Liz Cheney, and others recently helped kill off a voting rights bill that Democrats claim is essential to protecting democracy from a Trump-driven onslaught. The blanket opposition from these Republicans is provoking criticism that their rejection of the ex-president rings hollow, and despite their words, they are ultimately helping further his authoritarian agenda. Latosha Brown, co-founder of Black Voters Matter, said, "They might not like Trump, but they have the character of Trump. The reason why Trump was able to lead their party is because he claimed that he is a good representation. He's a liar, they lie. They've decided to use any means necessary to maintain power. If that means political corruption, they decide that they're going to go that route." Black Voters Matter and other groups warn the Republican-led states across the country are passing laws making it more difficult for African Americans and others to vote by consolidating polling locations, requiring certain types of identification, and ordering other changes. In response, Democrats in the House of Representatives recently passed the Freedom to Vote, John R. Lewis Act, which would make Election Day a national holiday, ensure access to early voting and mail-in ballots, and enable the Justice Department to intervene in states with a history of voter interference. The legislation was also supported by all 50 Democrats in the Senate, but collapsed in recent days when Republicans used a procedural rule known as the filibuster to block it in the evenly divided chamber. Chuck Schumer, the majority leader, then called on a vote on changing Senate rules to allow the chamber to pass the bill by a simple majority vote. Again, all Republicans were opposed, and now they were joined by Democrats Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, ensuring a 52-48 defeat. It was a bitter defeat for President Joe Biden just hours after he held a marathon press conference on Wednesday, 19th of January, marking the end of his first year in office. The president said in a statement, "I am profoundly disappointed." Much liberal fury was focused on Democratic holdouts Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, but their intransigence only mattered because all the Republicans, including so-called moderates, stood firm against legislation that aims to combat voter suppression, which largely impacts communities of color, even those who claim to be fiercely anti-Trump. Mitt Romney, a former presidential nominee, is a prime example. He was the only senator to break with his party by voting to convict Donald Trump for abuse of power in his first impeachment trial in 2020. He was then one of seven Republicans to find Donald Trump guilty of incitement of insurrection at his second impeachment trial last year. Yet, by then, Romney, senator for Utah, had already spelled out his opposition to the voting rights legislation, dismissing it as a partisan takeover of federal elections, and even comparing it to Trump's false claim of election rigging in 2020. Mitt Romney was not alone. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, who also voted to convict Donald Trump at last year's impeachment trial, described the push to defend voting rights as a charade to satisfy a minority addicted to rage on Twitter, adding, "It's bad for America. It's just as undermining of public trust in elections as what Donald Trump did last year." Senators Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Rob Portman, and Tim Scott, all of whom have spoke out against Donald Trump at various times, opposed the bill. In the earlier House vote, Never Trumpers Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger also told the party line. Liz Cheney, Vice Chairwoman of the House Select Committee investigating the 6th of January insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, has earned bipartisan admiration from some unlikely quarters. New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman even floated the idea of her becoming Joe Biden's running mate in the 2024 election. But the daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney made clear last year she did not see connection between Trump's big lie about 2020 and the blitz of voter restrictions imposed by Republican state legislatures. Liz Cheney told Axios website, for example, "I will never understand the resistance to voter ID." Some commentators agree that there is nothing inconsistent about decrying Trump's assault on democracy and rejecting Democrats' sweeping proposals. Michael Steele, the first African-American to serve as chairman of the Republican National Committee, said, "You can be against Donald Trump and have a policy view on voting rights. I would personally maybe disagree with it. That would not lead them to support the proposed legislation in the House or the Senate." But some conservative critics of Donald Trump admit that the reforms, which they regard as an example of government overreach at the expense of states' autonomy, even though Article 1 of the Constitution explicitly authorizes Congress to set federal election rules, put them in a quandary. Joe Walsh, a former Republican congressman from Illinois, said, "I'm vehemently anti-Trump, but anti what the Democrats are trying to do at the federal level. So I'd be in the same grouping. Republicans are doing a bunch of work with little value, but the answer to that, in my mind, is not bad, unconstitutional federal legislation." But Joe Walsh objects to Mitt Romney's attempt to equate Donald Trump's lies with Joe Biden's policy. Joe Walsh said, "I disagree with Mitt Romney and any other Republican that's making any sort of comparisons between what Trump did to our elections and what Democrats are doing." The recent vote was also the latest marker of the Republican Party's transformation in the Trump era. 16 of its current senators voted to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act in 2006, but opposed the latest bill, which would update the most powerful part of the law. Republican presidents Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush all supported its renewal. Antoine Seawright, a senior advisor to the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, took issue with Mitt Romney and colleagues' claim that Republicans are not making it harder for minorities to vote. Antoine Seawright said, "It's intellectually dishonest for anyone to say that there's not an effort to suppress, suffocate, and silence the votes of black people, in particular around this country. All you have to do is look at the bills that have been filed and where they have been filed. With the voting rights measures aimed at safeguarding democracy now apparently dead in the water, it may be harder for independents, liberals, and others to heap praise on anti-Trump Republicans in quite the same way as before." Kurt Bardella, an advisor to the Democratic National Committee, argues that doing the right thing once does not make them heroes, adding, "Just because you're anti-Trump doesn't mean you're still not part of the anti-democratic effort that's being spearheaded by the Republican Party in America." Kurt Bardella, a former senior advisor to Republicans on the House Oversight Committee, added, "For Republicans like Mitt Romney and Liz Cheney, it says everything that they're still willing to be called Republicans and it is the Republican Party's position to make it harder for minorities in America to vote. You look at the closing of voting locations in states like Georgia, where locations that have the highest density of minority voters are now having less options to go vote. Kurt Bardella concluded by saying, "That's pretty straightforward. That's pretty racist. It demonstrates the white privilege in play for people like Mitt Romney and Liz Cheney to not see that. The reality is, if they're not willing to move forward and assist in the effort to enact voter protections in America, then they're Donald Trump's biggest ally."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Over the past few weeks, Russia has amassed nearly 100,000 troops on Ukraine's border. The Pentagon suggests Moscow is planning a false flag operation in Ukraine as a pretext for invasion.
Without getting into too much detail, we do have information that indicates that Russia is already working actively to create a pretext for a potential invasion. For a move on Ukraine. In fact, we have information that they pre-positioned a group of operatives to conduct what we call a false flag operation, an operation designed to look like an attack on them or their people or Russian-speaking people in Ukraine, again, as an excuse to go in.
A White House task force that includes the CIA is reportedly mulling over U.S. support for a guerrilla war in case Russia takes Ukraine. And Britain has sent military aid, including anti-tank weapons, to Ukraine. Kiev says it will defend itself from a potential attack carried out by Russia. Earlier in January, Washington reportedly sent secret shipments to Ukraine, enacting a previous decision to provide an additional $200 million in military aid. Now the U.S. President Joe Biden is threatening Russia with severe sanctions.
Well, let me start by first saying a few words about Russia and Ukraine. I've been absolutely clear with President Putin. He has no misunderstanding. If any assembled Russian units move across the Ukrainian border, that is an invasion. But it will be met with severe and coordinated economic response that I've discussed in detail with our allies, as well as laid out very clearly for President Putin. But there is no doubt, let there be no doubt at all, that if Putin makes this choice, Russia will pay a heavy price.
Moscow, however, continues to insist it has no intention to use force against Kiev. Back in December, the Russian president made it clear that his country was not after a war with its neighbor, but demanded pledges from the West, including a promise not to conduct NATO military activity in Eastern Europe. In December, Russia issued a set of proposals for enhancing collective security, which included guarantees that NATO would not expand further east and a particular agreement that no post-Soviet state, including Ukraine, should be permitted to join it. These demands were rejected by the US and its allies during a week of talks between officials from Russia, the US, NATO, and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. State Department negotiator Wendy R. Sherman has dismissed it as a non-starter, declaring the United States will not allow anyone to slam closed NATO's open door policy. There is little doubt that Russia is able to crush Ukraine in an all-out conflict, given its air and naval superiority. But the question is how a war would benefit Russian national security. Russia says its security is threatened by Ukraine's growing ties with the Western alliance and the possibility of NATO missiles being deployed against it on Ukrainian territory. Moscow says it has grounds to believe Washington and NATO could start building up forces near Russia in the coming months, using the tensions around Ukraine as a pretext. Meanwhile, the Kremlin has blamed Kiev for failing to abide by the Minsk protocols struck in 2014. The protocols meant to put an end to conflict in the nation's Donbas region, but have not come into effect. Russia says it is impossible to have good relations with the current Ukrainian government and that President Volodymyr Zelensky had come under the influence of radical forces. Russia believes it would be madness to start a war over Ukraine, but hasn't ruled out the possibility of taking counter-actions to NATO deployments if security negotiations fail and if its concerns go unheard. The West has made a lot of noises about the current developments over the Russia-Ukraine dispute. But in the worst-case scenario, it's not expected to do much. Over the past decade, the White House has shown it has no national interest sufficient to commit U.S. troops to defend Ukraine against invasion. And as for NATO, the alliance is unlikely to admit Ukraine in the end, as its own agreements prohibit admission of any country with a disputed border. All in all, it's better for all sides to give diplomacy a chance for settling disputes, what Russia has been insisting on and the West has been ignoring.
Ann Coulter has a gift for pushing just the right buttons to inflict maximum irritation. She has been a top-tier troll since Donald Trump was little more than a failed casino magnate. The article you're about to hear has been published in the opinion section of the New York Times. It has been written by Michelle Cottle, a member of the paper's editorial board. The piece is titled, Ann Coulter is rooting for a Trump-DeSantis throwdown. She's not alone. Coulter has a gift for pushing just the right buttons to inflict maximum irritation. She has been a top-tier troll since Donald Trump was little more than a failed casino magnate, which makes Ms. Coulter's recent attacks on the former president, her one-time political idol, at once delectable and illuminating. Take her contrarian assessment of Donald Trump's chokehold on the Republican Party. No one wants Trump, she asserted in a column last week. He's fading faster than Sarah Palin did, and she was second place on a losing presidential ticket. Passing recent polling data, Ann Coulter made the case that high approval for Donald Trump among Republicans is less about his enduring appeal than about the GOP having been boiled down to a Trumpian rump. Increasingly, she contended, the only people calling themselves Republicans these days are the Trump diehards. Ann Coulter's anti-Trump bile is not entirely new and carries the bitter fury of a disillusioned believer. While an early and enthusiastic MAGA convert during the 2016 presidential campaign, Ms. Coulter cheekily proclaimed herself ready to die for her candidate and penned a cringy hagiography titled In Trump We Trust, E Pluribus Awesome. She began souring on his presidency pretty quickly, though, over his failure to make good on his more draconian immigration promises. When Ann Coulter turns, she does not go gently. Her critiques of Donald Trump have included calling him a shallow, lazy ignoramus, a complete moron, a blithering idiot, and a lout. She now considers his entire presidency a flop. Trump accomplished everything he was ever going to accomplish at 2 a.m. on election night in 2016, she emailed me last week. The best thing that could have happened to the Republican Party and the country would have been for him to be vaporized at the moment he was announcing his victory. Mike Pence would have been afraid to betray Trump's supporters. But Trump wasn't. Of late, Ann Coulter has begun poking at Donald Trump from a very specific angle, comparing him unfavorably to Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. Ron DeSantis is a ticklish topic around Trump world. The governor rose to power by becoming a mini-Trump, and the former president still considers Ron DeSantis his creation. But the governor is clearly eyeing the White House in 2024 And unlike other potential candidates, he has not pledged to sit things out if Donald Trump runs. Such disloyalty does not sit well with the former president, and there are rumblings of a brewing feud between the two Florida men. As the water cooler chatter goes, Donald Trump sees Ron DeSantis as an ungrateful upstart, while Mr. DeSantis sees Donald Trump as expecting too much groveling. Earlier this month, when Donald Trump called politicians who refused to reveal their booster status gutless, it was seen as a slap at Ron DeSantis, who has been shifty about his booster situation. A few days later, Mr. DeSantis voiced regret over not aggressively opposing the nationwide lockdown that Donald Trump ordered early on in the pandemic. Republicans are eager to downplay tensions that risk undermining party unity. But Ann Coulter is eager to fan the flames. Trump is demanding to know Ron DeSantis' booster status, and I can now reveal it, she tweeted about the kerfuffle. He was a loyal booster when Trump ran in 2016, but then he learned our president was a liar and a con man whose grift was permanent. Ms. Coulter, it seems, has found a shiny new leader with whom to antagonize her former hero. For months now, Donald Trump's been playing the aging silent film star Norma Desmond in Sunset Boulevard to Ron DeSantis' younger, prettier Betty Schaefer, she wrote in her column on Wednesday, which closed with this punchline to the throat. Give voters a populist conservative who's not a con man and a liar, and they'll be Republicans again. No wonder Donald Trump hates Ron DeSantis. In her email, Ann Coulter got even more personal. DeSantis is better than Donald Trump for many, many reasons, including he won't bring Jared and Ivanka into the White House. She also expressed confidence that Ron DeSantis can handle Donald Trump. He's mostly just ignoring the 11-year-old. Unlike Trump, DeSantis has a day job. Having split with Donald Trump, Ann Coulter has an obvious interest in pushing the line that he is a washed-up relic. That said, the gal has a track record for sensing and exploiting political vulnerabilities. She's also just one tiny piece of a bigger predicament the GOP is facing. Every whisper of discord between Donald Trump and other Republican leaders is going to be devoured and amplified by a political class still obsessed with a former president and his influence. There are plenty of reasons for this. Many Trump critics are panting to see the ex-president's acolytes and enablers, like Ron DeSantis, pay a price for snuggling up to him for so long. Old-school Republicans are hoping that the party's up-and-comers will start putting some distance between themselves and the chaos of the Donald Trump era, a necessary step towards rescuing the GOP from its MAGA quagmire. As for the political media, it loves a good fight, and any fight featuring the former president promises to be tacky, unhinged, and entertaining. Going forward, Ann Coulter won't be the only force tweaking Donald Trump and focusing on any hint of friction. As usual, she'll simply be more shameless about it than most.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, this is your host Musa Al-Bahadili, and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss problems and other relevant questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. As usual, most of the answers are based upon the Holy Quran and upon the narrations of the Prophet and of the household of the Prophet, supplemented with the scientific data. Joining us in the studio is our guest speaker, an Islamic researcher, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi from the Islamic Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Our topic today, Sayyid, is the 25 mistakes we as parents make when we are raising our children and what the reasons behind them are. Now, the first topic we want to talk about is, why do children at all commit mistakes?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjal farajah. When it comes to one of the mistakes that we make is we don't know how to deal with our kids when they make mistakes.
Right.
Now, as parents, we should be able to understand the actions of children themselves. And we have to ask ourselves the most important question, which is, why do kids make mistakes?
Right.
So once we know the reasons, we can find the answers.
Right.
If you know what the disease is, you can easily cure it. But if you don't know what the disease is, you're going to shove medication that does not help, but it might what make the situation
even worse.
So, what makes first? Let's look at the causes and reasons to why kids make mistakes. Very simple. One, the child not having the ability to control himself. Okay. So sometimes when we talk to children, we talk to them as if they are adults, as if they have the capacity to control themselves. For example, when a child wants to go to the bathroom, and what do we say?
Hold it. Right. That's the first thing.
He doesn't have the capacity to hold.
Right.
But you make him hold it for 2 minutes, and he might, wet himself.
Right.
And then you have to blame him. Why did you wet yourself? So you have to understand the reason to why children do what they do.
So do not treat them as a fully developed adult.
So understanding the reason. So this is the reason number one why they make mistakes. Because they don't have the capacity to hold themselves.
Right.
And for example, even when it comes to them being, when them not wanting to share, for example,
right.
Or being selfish and being, I don't know, stingy with the toys or what have you.
Yeah.
Because it is their nature, you know?
Right.
So these are the things that they can't control himself. So therefore, asking them to do something beyond their comprehension, obviously, is the wrong thing to do.
Right.
Two, their ignorance and their lack of understanding to how things work. Again,
right.
They're not adults. They don't understand how things work. They are ignorant in their nature. Sometimes you have an adult who's ignorant,
yeah.
And he will make mistakes right, left, and center, and he is what? He's an adult. He's not a child.
Right.
So could you imagine a child who is obviously doesn't have any information, so technically speaking, he's ignorant.
Right.
Obviously, he's going to make a mistake.
makes sense, yeah. And with that, let's go ahead and say take.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.